Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, very unusual story. It's a tale as long as, you know, as old as time. Brand owner builds up their business, works like crazy, sells it. Oftentimes, you know, especially if it's big enough to a private equity company, who then proceeds to just run it into the ground and have problems with it. And this is where the story gets a little bit different today and why it's so unique. My guest today, who's Catherine Lavery, she's the founder of bestself.co. She went through this entire process. And after a year, the private equity company came back and said, hey, do you want to buy your business back? And she did. And it's such an interesting story. We talk about why she sold her business in the first place, some of maybe the false choices that she kind of in retrospect realized that she had to make when she sold that business. We talk about how much she had to pay to buy it back, the really impressive negotiation and the amazing multiple on sale price she was able to get it back for, and then how she's able to be able to use AI to streamline, run her business more effectively, and just some of the lessons from the whole process. We even talk about how she was able to find the sales memo that the private equity company wrote about her business after reacquiring it, and how interesting that was, seeing her business through the objective eyes of someone else. A fascinating story. She's a super smart woman, and it was a fun conversation. So hope you enjoy. It's a definitely a unique spin on the sale story that you've heard many times. I were to dive into it right after this. It is incredibly hard to trust reviews these days. Every restaurant on Yelp is 4.6 out of 5 stars. You get on Twitter and you find out the people promoting and advocating for certain apps end up, you know, actually are investors and they just don't disclose it. It's really hard to know what's real and what's spun. And that's why E-commerce Fuel is so unique and valuable. It's a group of 1,200 vetted 7- and 8-figure owners with zero agenda apart from your success and connecting with one another. No one's pitching you. There's no thinly veiled affiliate links, just operators sharing their unfiltered opinions. Just this morning in our forums, there's a couple of threads that popped up, one about a popular landing page service with half a dozen members warning people to steer clear, another member recommending a service, a shipping auditing service that saved them over $200,000 last year. And we take all these reviews over the decade we've been in existence, and we compile them into a review directory that has over 20,000 SaaS and agency reviews. So if you want to cut through the spin and the hype and learn from other store owners with zero agenda, check us out. You can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Looking for help to get the most out of your Shopify store? Don't waste time on theory or untested advice. Instead, download Zipify apps and copy one of the world's most successful Shopify stores. Zipify was created by my friend Ezra Firestone. And you probably know Ezra because he's been a guest on this podcast many times. But he's also the owner of multiple 8- and 9-figure e-commerce brands, including a $175 million store he built from scratch. And he's created 2 Shopify apps so you can leverage the same strategies he's using to scale his stores. One-Click Upsell is already the number one upsell app for over 18,000 Shopify stores, including brands like Tushy, Dr. Squash, Buffy, Jones Soda, and Victoria Beckham. And it's so effective that the average One-Click Upsell user boosts their total revenue by 10 to 15% practically overnight. And then there's Zipify Pages. Pages is the most user-friendly landing page builder on Shopify, and it's stacked with over 70 marketing templates so you can quickly generate leads, launch promotions, and drive more sales. And since both apps are tested first on Ezra's own 8- and 9-figure stores, you know they actually work. You can try out One-Click Upsell and Zipify Pages for free at Zipify.com. That's Zipify.com to try both out for free. I saw you went down, you did a rafting trip down the Salmon River with baby bathwater, right?
It was really fun.
Yeah. Did you do the main salmon, like where you put in kind of close to Salmon, Idaho, and then you pull out like around Riggins, that stretch?
No, I mean, we had to like fly in on like a private plane. It was like the middle of nowhere. And then I don't think it was the main salmon from what I, because there's like a couple of different areas. And I think we went off near the bottom because it wasn't like, if you drove there, it would take 8 hours in a car to drive mm-hmm. to where we were. And we flew in on these like tiny planes into a field. And then actually, no, we flew out from a field. We flew into like a small airport. I just don't know where it was.
Did you go by Buckskin Bill's place? There's that place yes. on the river. Okay. You were on the main salmon.
Okay.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful stretch of river. So you're probably at the work for like 5-6 days with everybody?
Yeah, it was like a 6 day. It was, and you're like completely cut off, which they told us before we went. They're like, you're not going to have phone signal. And I was like, yeah, we're probably going to have like some at some point in the trip, just not a lot. And then pretty much as soon as we got on the plane, it was like, oh yeah, we don't have any. But it was actually really nice because, you know, you go to events and a lot of times people are just like on their phones. And when you're on the river, everyone's just like present and like there. And it just reminds you of like, oh, this is like how it used to be where people were just like present because they didn't know anything else going on.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's funny. If you look at Idaho, so the Salmon River goes through, at least this portion of it goes through kind of the upper half of Idaho. And there's just, I think it's the Frank Church Wilderness that you went through. And it is the, I believe, the largest wilderness area in the lower 48. Like there's just no roads to go through like almost all of like upper central Idaho because it's just this massive wilderness. So.
Yeah. Are you from there or you just clearly have spent a lot of time there?
I grew up in Idaho and have floated that section of river probably 3 times across my life. It's just a really beautiful, beautiful section and very cool. So
I'm trying to see if I can go back this year.
Do they do it every year with baby bathwater?
Two years ago was their first year. I didn't do that. I did it last year and they're doing it again this year. It's like a small group. I think like 20 people.
Yeah.
But you have guides and stuff and they cook for you. So it's actually kind of a bougie trip.
I have compared to like, guided,
yeah,
the guided version sounds like super
cooking
nice.
Your own. Yeah, it was really nice.
So you didn't have to deal with the groover is what you're saying.
Oh, we dealt with the groover.
You dealt
but we didn't. Oh, I mean, we used it. We didn't have to deal with it. We had guides to deal with it. But yeah, I learned about it.
The groover for the uninitiated is this, it's an ammo can, at least the ones I've seen. It's an ammo can with a toilet lid on top because you have to pack in everything and pack everything out of the river. And that means everything. And so by the end of the trip, it becomes you're drawing straws on the non-guided versions of the trips for who deals with, sets up and takes down the groover. They get pretty nasty. So
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I would highly
recommend the guided trip if you can do
yes,
it.
Yes. Yes. I'll try to steer us away from groover. That's not what we're here to talk about. So excited to dive in with you on this. So I kind of teased at the very top about you selling the business, then buying it back, and of course want to get into the weeds and all the details. But why did you originally want to sell Best Self? Like, what was it that made you originally think about selling it to private equity in the first place?
I mean, a lot of people who've been in e-commerce for a while. I've been in e-commerce since 2012, and you know, my life was much different. I started the company and I love creating products. And that was kind of where I started from. I didn't have business experience as far as building a team or knowing what to do. Like I'd had other businesses, but it was very much like one person, hire some contractors. With Best Self, you know, I built a team, we'd scaled fast. And I call what I experienced, like there was a lot of inexperience debt that I just didn't know what I was doing. Which is easy to like figure out as you go when, you know, sales are going well and the business is going well. But there's some things that it's, you set yourself up. So it's almost like I had to exit to clear the slate of all the mistakes I made. That was from, you know, I had a business partnership that didn't work. I ended up buying him out and took on some personal debt for that. We dealt with embezzlement. Then we had supply chain issues. Then we had COVID. And I had this team, and it's really difficult, you know, when people are counting on you to like, even if you see, oh, I have to change something in the business, it's like you have to be courageous and either realizing you have to do it regardless, or you have to let people go that no longer need to be there so that you can make the changes that you want. And it was difficult for me to understand, first of all, where we were going. And then I had a baby and I was like, I'm tired. I'm seeing like we might be going into recession. I feel like now I have the pressure of I have another human being to look after. Maybe I should take some money off the table. And so there's a lot of like personal reasons, as well as, you know, when I dealt with the business partner issues and done all this stuff, the goal was always like, oh, I can just sell this in future. And then whenever I got to the point where I wasn't really enjoying it anymore, because, you know, I had this pressure on, I had this payroll of the team, I felt like I wasn't doing the work that I actually really liked anymore. Because it was, you know, we hired people and it's just funny, entrepreneurs that start from the idea of like, oh, I want to create products. And then they create this almost like a prison that they're not even doing what they liked in the beginning. And so that's kind of where I was. And I loved like the brand and the products and I believed in them, but I was like, but it's difficult to like reverse decisions that you made years before and, you know, even change the culture of the team or make, you know, because you've kind of, again, created it this way and it's hard to go back. And so I was like, okay, I'll someone approached me to sell it. And at the time, again, I'd had a baby like 3 months before and I'm thinking it would be really nice to just take a break and sort of free up my headspace. And then I knew I'd start another business sometime, but I was like, I could do it differently this time because I know what to do and what not to do and how to build it in a way that was like growing, but not growing for the sake of growing and scale and exit and like these like revenue numbers that look really good, but profitability is like low for the volume that you're doing. And so that's kind of the reason that I decided to sell. I had a couple of people interested. And when I made the decision, like, okay, I'll sell, let me just start having conversations with people. Because the first offer that came in wasn't that exciting. I'm like, well, I'm not going to do it if I'm not like actually excited about the offer.
Yeah. Looking at fast forwarding a little bit ahead here, if you, with the hindsight that you have now, do you think you were in a kind of this false dichotomy mindset where you thought either I can either continue to operate the business as is, doing the things I don't enjoy, not doing the things I love, or I can sell it and wash my hands of everything? Was there a middle ground that you could have taken at that point that didn't include having to sell it and rebuy it and all those things, where you could have just said, hey, I'm going to change the business to make it more, to fit me better and continue in that path? Like, is that something you think would have been a viable option, or do you think you really need to sell it and come back to it later?
Oh, I think it was definitely a viable option. I think I just wasn't seeing that as an option because it would have required some hard decisions and hard conversations, which I'd gotten much more comfortable in the last few years having. But again, in my personal life, I'd also just had a baby and I'm not at like my best mental state as far as like, I can put all my time and effort into like turning this ship the other direction. Like I was like, I'm tired. And I didn't take time off and I did have someone like running the day to day, but at the end of the day, it still comes back to you in the end. And I don't watch a lot of the news ever really, but I am hearing like, oh, we might go into recession. So I'm thinking like new mom brand of like, okay, well, I've put all this time and energy and money into this company and this person's interested in buying it. And I'm also tired and it gave me some time off. And so there's just a lot of different things. So it's like, I could have, and that's kind of one of the things I've been talking to people is like, you don't have to sell your business and buy it back for you to be able to do this. But at the time, I just was not in the mental state to even see like a third path.
Yeah, that makes sense. I thought this was fascinating. I was reading kind of your detail. You did a case study about this in the forums, which we'll link up to. You, and again, fast forwarding a little bit here, but when you were going through diligence with this company who offered to buy you and eventually did end up buying you, the private equity company, they had an internal investment memo that they wrote and put on their servers and kind of distributed to the team. And then when you got the business back, somehow that got included in the documents you saw. So you got to read this memo about your business when people were thinking about investing in it that was never meant for your eyes, which I think is fascinating. What was that like? And like, what did you learn about your business and how they looked at it when you read that?
I mean, when I was coming back and, you know, I'm just looking at this really well-organized Google Drive and I'm still like stumbling upon stuff, which is, it's like a treasure hunt. I don't even know that I'm in, but the memo was cool because it's, you know, you have these experts looking at your business from a completely objective position as far as like, here's the cons, here's the pros, here's what they did well, here's what they were missing. And there was actually a lot of it completely made sense. They were like, oh, they wasted money here. And I'm like, yeah, we did waste money there. I forget the wording they used. It was something like founder managed it adequately. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good. Considering I didn't have any experience. I was like, okay, I'm pretty proud of that. And so it was just, and then looking at competitors and what they were doing and what they would recommend. I believe they pretty much did this memo for their investors, maybe it was. I don't know what the purpose was because obviously I wasn't supposed to see it. But after I got it back, I was reading and I'm like, okay, this is, I got myself a good deal as far as like getting it back.
Yeah. What were the things that they said that you wasted money on and that you agreed with them on?
I mean, one of the things was just, we had a European 3PL, which we'd had, like we set up, because we launched our Kickstarter and that did really well. And we had a pretty big European group of buyers. And so as soon as our Kickstarter had gone, we had opened up a UK warehouse, which was amazing for the first few years. But then when Brexit happened, and it just made things like tougher to actually, you couldn't send stuff out from where the warehouse was to the rest of Europe because of how things had changed. Or it was just like compliance was a pain in the ass and you dealt with that. And so probably for like the 18 months before I sold, it was like, we should, just get rid of the inventory in the UK and shut that whole thing down. But it was this like sunk cost bias where it's like, well, we already have inventory there. And like, now we just sort of destroy it or send it back. And that seems like a waste of money. And so whenever I sold the business, one of the stipulations, they were like, we don't want to deal with this European thing. So just like destroy all the products there. And so what I ended up doing is with their permission, I donated a bunch of product to like my old university and my old high school, because I was like, sent stuff to family because I was like, well, it seems like a waste. And then we did destroy a bunch as well. But that was like a decision that we should have made earlier, because it was just like fulfillment and warehouse and storage costs that we should have just looked at the bigger picture. But again, you're in the weeds of like, okay, we have product here. Like, why destroy it? When it was like one of those hard decisions where you just have to rip off the Band-Aid and be done with it.
Yeah. It's just such a unique thing because it's so hard to get real, objective, candid feedback on anything in life from anybody. So that sounds like a very cool, interesting, maybe painful at times, but eye-opening thing to be able to read through. That's pretty neat. So it's October 2022. You sell the business. The private equity company owns it for, I don't know, a year and a half or so. And then how did you get the opportunity to buy it back? Like, did they reached out to you, correct?
Yeah. So part of our deal, there was an earnout piece where they had to hit 90% of the trailing 12 months revenue. I think that was it. And for me to get that piece of the earnout, and that had happened kind of, the earnout wasn't so big, but due diligence, things happen and a few things change at the very end. Some stuff actually was not their fault. So I'm not going to say, a lot of times people are like, oh, they change it last minute. I'm like, well, something did materially change because we had an issue with one of our products on Amazon. So it wasn't really something that I believe that they did maliciously. So the earnout ended up being like larger than the initial plan was. So I was like, oh, I'm more like invested in it doing well than I otherwise would have been.
Yeah. So when did they reach back out to you and say, hey, we're interested in selling this back to you? That was like 12 or 18 months after you closed and you sold it to them?
It was almost just a year.
A year. Wow. Okay.
So I got the year was October. And then at the beginning of December, I'd been talking to them about like, if I was going to get this earnout, and the CEO had been like a little, I think he was just trying to keep me on his good side as far as like, oh, let me see what I can do. And then he called me and he's like, look, the board's not going to go for the earnout. And actually, the whole company is shutting down and we're selling off the brands. Do you want to buy it back? That's pretty much it. In the first 5 minutes of this phone call, that's how it went.
And what was, when you think about the multiples you ended up buying it back at, because maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but I'm curious, either based on a multiple basis or just a percentage basis, how much were you able to buy it back relative to what you sold it for?
So I sold it for a multiple, and I mean, if I'd gotten my earnout plus inventory, so it was maybe like a 5x plus, but I ended up only getting 3.5, I think, plus the cost of inventory. And then I bought it back for a percentage of the inventory.
Oh, wow. Okay. So pretty much free with the, so you got a screaming deal on the buyback side, even considering that they'd kind of, done some major damage to the brand at that time.
Yeah. And I think that's why I got the deal that I did, is just, I think honestly, they were ready to move on to the next thing. They're all hired guns. Nobody put their own money into it, which made negotiating it back after easier. because again, it's not their money they lost. Whereas I'm thinking like, this is the money I'm buying it back for. So like, how do I get a good deal? And the longer that they left it, it's like, oh, are they going to go to market? But they have no team. There's like a skeleton team running the three brands that they bought. Nobody knows what they're doing. Whereas my whole thing was like, look, just give me the one password vault and you guys can go away. I don't really need anything.
You always hear about negotiation, like whoever is most willing to walk away has the most leverage, and it's very true. Coming into this, was that their offer out of the gates, or did you have to, were you kind of initially pretty coy or not even sure if you wanted it? Like, how much did you have to negotiate, and how did that deal come about, and how hard did you have to push?
So I think I gave them an offer towards the end of December, and it took a while. Like, they didn't present my offer to the board for a bit. Like, they were trying to, I think, save face with what they were going to go to the board with. And so my offer was based on, okay, here, this much inventory, there's no team, things like that. And I had someone I was going to go in on the deal with that I used to work with. And we were both kind of negotiating together and then decided, you know, I've been in partnerships before and it wasn't really, I could see some red flags. So I'm like, I'm just going to handle this myself, because I kind of brought him into the deal. There were some red flags. And so I, you know, was like, okay, let me just move forward with this without making any rash decisions before I go through with this. I could always, you know, raise money later if I wanted, but this is enough that I can just deal with it myself. And also just the challenge of that. So the offer that I gave them, I mean, I gave them a pretty low offer in the beginning. So I came up, but it was still like a good offer.
Your initial offer was lower than just half of inventory?
Yeah.
That's a pretty gutsy offer right out of the gates.
Well, because I was like, look, you know, I didn't get this amount of money because you guys screwed up
yeah.
and didn't do this thing. So I was counting that as part of it. And then part of it was like, you know, it'd been 14 months and there was inventory that was like, I don't know if this is sellable anymore. I mean, it is sellable, but like that I was counting as like kind of like dead inventory. But they weren't going to like separate inventory of like what I wanted versus what I didn't. So I was like, look, I'll deal with like destroying the inventory or getting rid of it, of doing whatever. I'll basically take these headaches off your hand. I'm not going to like nickel and dime you for each thing because that's exhausting for both of us. So let me just give you an offer and then go from there. And then we ended up figuring something out.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Julia from abarabove.com, where she and her husband and co-founder sell premium mixology products. Julie's been incredible. She's one of our meetup leaders in California and just an amazing human. And here's what she has to say about her experience with the e-commerce fuel private community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
I am one of those people that logs into the forums probably every day. It's kind of like my Facebook feed for business. I like the gossip. I like to hear about all the different challenges that people are running into. A lot of times things will pop up there on the forums that weren't even on my radar. It's just kind of like a more interesting social media for me. And I love to just continue to stay in touch with a lot of the friends and acquaintances I've met along the way. So I would definitely say the forums, I'm on there all the time. Even if I don't post all the time, I just, I've learned so much and I continue to just really enjoy being a part of that.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. Yeah. And I know you were not 100% sure you wanted to buy it back, partially because of valuation, but even partially with other things, right? Like there's a lot of things that were going on in your life and you sold it for some valid reasons, of course. Quick little rabbit trail here. You mentioned part of the reason you would buy it back is to try to use AI and streamline operations and things because you had been using ChatGPT to really manage your cognitive load, which I think you had said was nothing short of magical. Will you talk a little bit about that? Talk a little bit about that. Like, how were you using or have been using, even outside of Best Self, once you required it, ChatGPT for really amazing things? Like, what's, how's that look like in your life?
So the 14 months I wasn't, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And I'm always a believer of like, okay, businesses come from like solving problems. And I wasn't like, obviously I have a bunch of problems, but nothing that I was like very excited to solve. And there was a few reasons I bought it back beyond like just getting a good deal. It was also thinking, okay, I don't have a team anymore, which does mean I will have to work. But at the same time, it kind of clears the plate as far as the pressure of the payroll and their sales coming in, the brand is there. And even when I, you know, and I had time off and I didn't know I was going to buy it back. I was in my mind, I'm like, I love that brand and the products that we created. I hope I can do something like that again. Because, you know, I'm the type of person, like I need to like love whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm creating. It's very difficult for me. I mean, I have ADHD, so that's another problem. So I was like, okay, if I buy it back, how would I do it differently? And that was like, how would I use AI? You know, I use ChatGPT to basically be an intern for me, you know, and it solves a lot of problems that otherwise, like creating job descriptions, creating a skill test for hiring, helping me with supply chain. So if I can load in different spreadsheets of information and just ask it questions, I can get to the answer much quicker than I could have done before. And I think ChatGPT came out a month after I sold. And I just use it. It's pretty much always open in a browser to help me figure things out and even just like brainstorm. And so whenever I was thinking about buying it back, I'm not going to have ChatGPT on it, but I do use it to get a lot of stuff done that otherwise would have taken me a lot more time and then free up my time to work on the things that I really like to do. So like the other night I came up with an idea for a product and worked with ChatGPT. Like I have a lot of like very deep prompts that I use now, and that helps me brainstorm products that otherwise would take months to create that I can quickly like figure things out. And it could go from like months to weeks, and that otherwise that time would have been spent, you know, just figuring things out. So just like the time to do things, the mental load to handle things, and getting ideas of like how I could be doing things in a more streamlined, efficient way, with the goal of not creating a business that I'm like scaling and growing for the sake of some exit or big number, but something that I enjoy working on. And for me, like figuring out problems and figuring things out is fun for me. So if I can use tools and AI to make things fun while being more efficient, then that's generally better for like the business and for me.
Yeah. So you repurchased it, closed on it, I don't know, 60 or 90 days ago, I think earlier this spring. What's it been like? What's been the good, the bad, and the ugly since taking it over in the last 3 months?
I mean, I remember when I was like doing the transition and they were like, okay, do you have a team? And I was like, nope, just me. And so it was really just like uncovering everything that had been done. You know, when I sold it, we were 35% Amazon, 65% our own D2C. And I came back and it's like 80% Amazon. They'd sent like all of our products to Amazon instead of like the flagship ones that really should be on there. And the rest is more of like AOV stuff or like things that people would only buy in our store. Nobody's looking for it on Amazon. And so it was things like that where it was just like untangling a web. And, you know, I got it back at the end of January. I think pretty much since they were told that there was no more funding and they were going to be shutting down, I believe that happened at the beginning of December, because things just kind of stopped then. Like people weren't responding to customers or dealing with, I went on and there was 25 credit card disputes on the Shopify account that nobody had like dealt with. And so there's just like all these things that the first pretty much 100 days I was getting some version of a team in place and then also unraveling some of the things they did and then putting like long-term things in place. So it's like, okay, let me use this for customer service rather than the one that they were using, which was, I still don't know if there was a human being actually responding. They were like, oh, we're using AI. They used AI for a bunch of stuff, but they weren't, there was no like human being overlooking AI. And turns out it was really efficient at like annoying customers and wasting money on ads that weren't efficient. So AI was like burning money. And so I was like turning things off and, you know, minimizing the stuff that we didn't need or just like completely cutting things all together. Because the good thing is it was a new credit card, you know? So like, it was like, okay, everything's canceled and I just turn things on as I need them, which was a blessing because you can, you know, you can take on a lot of bloat, especially when I sold it. You know, I'd been much better the last few years of like cutting what we didn't need, but yeah. It's just like, oh, a tool here and a tool there that nobody uses, or an app on Shopify that's actually costing you thousands of dollars a year that nobody uses.
Yeah, it adds up. And so where, how far had revenue and profits fallen? Had they, how bad was the damage and how much pain did they inflict on your business in a year?
I mean, Amazon had grown, but they were also spending a ton on like ads and just didn't, profitability didn't really matter. So the revenue overall, I think had fallen about 22%-ish when I got it back. Like if you did the year to a year, and then they'd moved it mostly to Amazon, which of course was like less profitable as a channel. But it wasn't like, it was like flesh wounds. I didn't think it was a critical thing. I knew I could get it back. I just had to do like one thing at a time to like get the boat back on track. And it's funny because my wife was like, oh, you know, she's known me since I had a team and delegation and everything else. And when I got the company back, it was like, the ship is moving and there's nobody on it. Like, you know, the store is technically still on, Amazon's still on, but like nobody is manning it or like checking on things. So it was very much like I had to be in the weeds, which was fun because it's just like quick. I'm like good at taking action. So it's just like fixing things and like patching things up and like figuring out what the next thing was and, you know, hiring the people that had skills that I didn't even know where to start. So it was exciting and fun and stressful at the same time.
You come in, team's entirely gone. So you have the ability to bring in people when you need to, but then you also, as we talked about with AI, like a big part of why you bought this was thinking through how you could, not using the AI playbook that the private equity company did, they did a crappy job of that, but much more strategically with oversight using AI. Where you still have people managing things and where have you found that AI has actually been a really effective at running parts of your business that otherwise previously were manned by people?
I mean, I think it's more, I've hired humans and then I'm also training them how to use AI to do things more efficiently. So where we might have had, you know, four or five people doing a job, we could not have two people with using AI and coming up with prompts and like training it the way that we need to be able to get the right info. And it's more of just like, even say emails, before we're starting from scratch, as far as, you know, you open up a new thing and you're starting over. But when you can feed it information of like, here's all of our past emails that have done well, here's what we're trying to talk about, here's like our calendar, and you're giving it as much info, then you're almost starting with some sort of a skeleton version that you can edit and adapt, which is much easier for my team than starting from zero. And so what might take days before to come up with something is actually more like hours to get it done. And so it's really training people how to use it most effectively.
What are, so you mentioned email and kind of like prompts and rough drafts. What other things specifically are you having people use AI more for, use AI for more in your business than before? Are you using it on the paid ad side, the product development side? What else?
I mean, one thing we've done is like we pulled all of our product reviews into ChatGPT and we pulled out like golden nugget reviews that we could use in ads that would otherwise take us way longer to just filter through. And we've done that for a bunch of products. And then we can test, you know, 20 different, keep everything else the same and test 20 different headlines with a bit of ad spend to see where to put more money. And that can take, you know, from having nothing to having final tests done within a week. That again, if someone had to be going through reviews, finding them, selecting them, creating the graphics, doing all that, and then testing it, that's going to take, what, 3 weeks? A month? I don't know. And so it's really just the speed of execution in which you can get to the thing that you want to do instead of prepping and doing all the other stuff that you need to do to get the information ready. Another thing I've used it for is just like a big pain point in our past has been supply chain and forecasting and stuff like looking at like pulling sales information from different channels and then having literally like we're trying to get better at this, but at the start we used ChatGPT to come up with what we thought we were going to sell, and then going in and adapting it later what we actually did, and it's actually very close, which is good.
Interesting. That's fascinating. So net, let's say 5 months later, are you glad you bought the business back? Like, was it a good move, or are you thinking, man, any regrets? Or are you feeling good?
I feel good. You know, I think it was a good decision. I love the brand. I have some like bigger ideas of where we could go with it. I think the only thing is like, oh, you know, it almost feels like you're going backward a little bit, because you're like, oh, I sold and I'm doing this. And then you're like, oh, actually I bought it back. But I'm like, who gets the chance to like do their company again in a way that they can take the learnings and do it much better the second time? So I was like, this is gonna be a good story. And again, I love like what it is that we're creating. So when I think of like, good decision for me? Yes. Is it the thing that's going to make me the most money I could have made? Maybe not. But like now I've kind of seen, like I like working on something that it feels like I have a purpose, and I felt a little lost whenever I had my time off. You know, as much as I love being a mom and, you know, playing with projects and learning things, I like having something that I'm working on and then almost sharing how things work with a real business instead of just kind of making up pretend scenarios. So yeah, I'm excited for what's next, whatever that looks like.
The cold plunge sauna combo you put in looked pretty sweet in your backyard. That was nicely done.
I mean, that was like, I could create an in-ground cold plunge company like everyone else. But I built because I used to be an architect. So I designed this like in-ground it's like an industrial water holder that I found online, and then I did all the piping, and now it's like an actual cold plunge in the ground that you can jump into. It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
And it's honestly the only thing that keeps me sane in Austin in July, August.
The little respite from the crazy 105 heat with humidity. I want to geek out, totally different direction, changing gears a little bit. You published a video a day for 100 days, which I thought was really interesting. And I don't think this is necessarily related to Best Self. Maybe it is. Maybe it was Best Self, or maybe it was just kind of personal branding. I'm not sure. Maybe you can fill us in. But I'd love to hear why you did that and how it went and any lessons you learned. Because that's kind of a video a day for 100 days is intense.
Yeah. So it wasn't to do with Best Self, although some topics would go into Best Self territory as far as like a productivity thing or something like that. But I wanted to just get better at publishing something and putting it online instead of not, you know, like trying to perfect it and make it good. It was like every day. It wasn't like I batched these, which is another thing that took away. I like literally would get up. I had a list on my phone of possible ideas, and then I would record it, edit it, publish it all in one day myself. So I learned, first of all, just how to do that in an efficient way by the end of like, again, I used AI and ChatGPT to help me like figure out all the like minutia things that I would stop me publishing before. It's like, oh, I don't have the perfect title, or what's a good like hashtag for this, or whatever it was. And so it helped me with that. And then it also helped me figure out, what are people interested in? What gets people's attention? How do I just create an interesting story? And so I really just did it again. Some of the videos did well. Most of them didn't, but it was still fun.
Was this on Instagram or YouTube, or where were you doing this?
It was on TikTok or Instagram. If the video was under a minute, it would go on all three. But if it was pretty much TikTok, Instagram, when it wouldn't really fit on YouTube.
Got it. And what did you find from an interest?
And it was always like a short form. It wasn't like not the landscape version, like the vertical.
What did you find was most interesting to people or resonated most with people? And obviously it can vary based on audience and demographic and stuff, but was there common themes or things that you like, what patterns did you notice?
There was a few ones where I just did it, and it's just shocking that I think that I live in this bubble where I'm like, oh, of course everyone knows how to do this. And it was just literally simple, like a productivity tip that is like, oh, here's how to do something in Gmail, because, or here's a prompt that I use for, like I actually, protested my property taxes using ChatGPT, and I like did a video on that, and that did well. And so it was very much like I wouldn't have an idea of what I was going to do that day, because sometimes I would read this list and I'm like, I don't really feel like anything. And then someone would ask me something, like I think the cold plunge made it in a bunch because I was doing it at the time, or I just finished it. And so it would be like something that someone would ask me advice on or something like that, and I would just be like, oh, I'll just do a video on this. So it was very much like prompts that I would use to do specific like real life things, productivity tips, or like brief stories of how to do things better, or a few things I've done around like ADHD that have helped me just like run my like day-to-day life.
So a bunch of things. And was it, how did it impact your follower count and the audience you could build? Was it a meaningful push? Like, did you see meaningful growth in that 100 days?
Yeah, I think on the stuff that I paid attention to, which was basically Instagram and TikTok, I think I would like to do it again. I need to get the business a bit under control, but I do want to do it for best self things specifically. But I need to plan out more ahead of time, because I think it would have done better had I had more of a focus of what I was working on. But at the time, I was in between projects, which was the whole reason I did it. I was like, oh, when am I going to ever have time to like do a video a day for 100 days? So that's why I did it. But I think if I had more targeted as far as like what I was trying to get out of it and one like niche or topic that I wanted to talk about, it would have done much better. But again, I always set goals and outcomes for things, and it was nice to just do it because I enjoyed it.
You had in one of your, you've got a great, great blog and newsletter over at littlemite.com. I would strongly recommend checking it out and signing up. All sorts of productivity, business, and other interesting topics. And you mentioned an app, like the 1 Second Every Day app. I think it's 1se.co. I might be wrong on that. I had never really heard about this, but you take a quick video, 1 second every day, stitches them together for however long you want. And just such a cool idea. Like, we're going to be doing a bunch of fun stuff with our family this year. And so I wanted to, it just what a great way to like remember all the little things that you might otherwise forget in a year. So I thought that was a cool mention.
Yeah. And I met the guy who created that app, and the whole goal was just to remember your life, because like I barely remember what I did yesterday. Yes. And the good thing about this app is it even takes, you know, when you have a live photo, it will take it and make it like a little video. And for my daughter's like first year of life, I did that 1 second every day. And then on her first birthday, we like play the video, and it just makes you appreciate it. And I stopped doing it every day, like as a habit, which I'm kind of mad at myself for. I bet I could like pick it, because you can actually go back in your phone, and if you've taken a photo or video that day, you can pull it in. So it's not like you have to remember on the day to do it, which is good. But yeah, it's like a really, I always tell like new parents to do it, because it's like a tiny thing and you'll realize, oh my God, they've grown so much and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, definitely going to be doing that. So thanks for the mention on there. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for kind of the story. Congrats on selling the business. Congrats on buying the business back and being able to kind of streamline it. It's such a unique and interesting, cool story. And I mentioned Best Self at the very top, but yeah, let people know kind of all the different products you have there and journals, and give people just in your own words, a description of it, because there's some really cool stuff over there they should check out.
Yeah. So we started with journals, which is like goal setting, productivity journals. And then we got into more intentional relationship building. So card decks for you and your partner, you and your kids, you and your community, your coworkers. And so that we have different decks for everyone. And those have been like, we've gotten some amazing reviews of people that are like, I've been married for 15 years. And we literally just found out this new thing about each other. So I love hearing stuff like that. And I'll actually create, I'm doing this on the fly, but I'll just create like an e-com fuel discount code, so that everyone who wants it after this goes live for like a month will get a discount.
Amazing. Thanks. Is there a code that we can just pick now, so people know like e-commerce fuel, if they use that, does that work? Okay.
E-com fuel.
Yeah. E-com fuel.
Or e-commerce fuel. Let's just do ECF.
ECF, perfect. Super generous, thank you. And then littlemite.com. I love it. You have this, it's your newsletter, and you have a combination of business stuff, personal stuff, kind of productivity, personal development. It's all over the board, and it's just fun to read. So well done with that. So if you're interested in that, littlemite.com is where you can check out the archives and sign up. And anything else you want to mention or kind of say before we put a bow on it here?
If anyone's in Austin, I'm going to go to the e-com event in Austin. I think it's in like 2 weeks or something like that. Need to get more involved in your community. But yeah, if you want to chat, littlemite.com. That's where I talk about everything behind the scenes that you won't see on bestself.co. And it goes from, you know, literally if I'm going through something, I'll share about it either on the newsletter if I really don't want it public, or public on the blog. And that could be, I dealt with embezzlement a few years ago. And I think a lot of you know, people in business, like, I don't want to share this because it makes me look bad. And, you know, some of it does, but it's also good because I think being vulnerable and sharing the bad things and not just the highlight reel. So I was like, you know, I won this Shopify competition. Everything's amazing, but I also got divorced and that sucked. And then I also dealt with a business partner issue and embezzlement. And so I try to share like the great things and then also the things that people don't usually talk about. And then almost like break it down as like, here's how it happened and here's how I'd do differently. So I feel like I'm taking the lemons and making lemonade for everyone else.
Yeah, that's super cool. Not enough people do that. It takes guts and some bravery to do, but people are so appreciative of it. So yeah, kudos to you on that because that's hard to do, but it's very needed.
Yeah.
Very needed. Well, Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah, it's been amazing having you in the community and hope to run into you in Austin soon. So congrats on the business success and repurchase and look forward to catching up sometime.
Yeah, I hope I'll be back in a year and I can say everything of how it went after, you know, more than 5 months.
We'll talk about how you've sold it to another private equity company and then buy it back again. And you just keep laddering up at like increasing multiples and discounts until...
My family are not entrepreneurs or business people. And so they're just like, wait, you bought it back? How does that work? So I think if I did it again, they'd be like, is this some sort of Ponzi scheme? Like what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, even people who are in business, I think they're like, wait, what? You sold it and then you bought it back? That's super cool. So, because I think so many people sell a business. I don't know if they regret it, but like you mentioned, you know, like you're trying to figure out what's next and what to do. And I really do think I kind of alluded to this at the top. I think so many of us get to a point where you can only see one of two options, sell the business or continue as is, because there's like this fear and like you've built up this asset that has all this value. And if you experiment with it, and let's say your earnings go down 20%, it's not just your earnings that go down 20%. It's like the enterprise value of what you've built goes down 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%. And so there's such a fear in messing with a good thing when you could sell it. But then I think there's also not thinking through the upside of, well, what happens if I change it and I tweak it to be something that I can run and own and build sustainably for a long time and it works. And that like is the best, I think, of all outcomes.
Yeah. Because God forbid you would not grow every year over year.
Right. I mean, yeah, you don't do that. That just, you know, everything bursts into flames and your life is awful, which is not the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, so fun. Thank you so much. And look forward to talking soon. Appreciate it. And best of luck with the reacquired business.
All right. Thanks so much, Andrew.
Yeah. That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at eCommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.